Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in. It is so cool to be able to talk to a registered dietitian on this podcast that is taking us through her journey of like, they've created this app that's now and a device, but really it's the technology and understanding that's helping people gain access and awareness into their body. And that's what we're doing as physical therapists. We created the Gen Health platform that is really your access to a day-to-day set plan. This is your way of being able to see, okay, I come in, I have 10 to 15 minutes, I don't have a lot of time. There's only 1 to 2 videos a day. And if you commit to that on a day-to-day process, you 100% are going to start to feel something different. And we go through the whole process. So if you're in knee pain or back pain, shoulder pain, like we're going to give you not only mobility, but strengthening specific exercises around that body part that is going to help to relieve any tension and pain that you're having in the area. And if you trust the process, go through the plan, you're going to unlock your phase 2, unlock your phase 3, and eventually start to progress along the way. And we really hope that people start to experience this because we've already in testing phases gotten such great feedback from people who are following the plans and really feeling a difference in their body. So it's so incredible. I'm so excited just to keep expanding on this process and see what continues to open up for people. So if you haven't yet, go type into your browser, gen.health. We give away a week for free within the plans that you can just at least start. Just start the videos, start to see what it's about, and then continue on because we know it takes more than a week, it takes more than 30 days. It's really a lifelong journey. So I hope you start exploring and see what your body is capable and able to achieve. So excited to have Kara Collier on the podcast today. She's a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and certified nutrition support clinician with a background in clinical nutrition and nutrition technology and entrepreneurship. And after becoming frustrated with the traditional healthcare system, she helped start the company NutriSense, which is actually the company that Dom and I have been trying ourselves. And she's now a co-founder and the director of nutrition. Kara is the leading authority in the use of continuous glucose monitoring, or CGM, technology, particularly in non-diabetics, for the purpose of health optimization, disease prevention, and reversing metabolic dysfunction. This has been a fascinating podcast, so get your notepad ready to take notes to understand what this all means and how this can affect your body. Now, if you really want to see what this NutriSense company can do, because you're going to learn a lot about it and see what a CGM on yourself can really tell yourself, well, then click the link down in the show notes. We're going to have it linked up and use code OPTIMAL because they're giving $50 off your first month.
Kara, thanks so much for making time to come on with us today and talk everything blood glucose.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, this has been a really exciting journey. I was just saying how we are wrapping up our 2 weeks. Dom had done it one other time with the continuous glucose monitor, the CGM from NutriSense. And this is, I'm just ending, you know, my first time ever using one.
Jen had a little celebration this morning because if we rewind to day one of using the glucose monitor, and she had her gluten-free bagel, which is like one of her favorite breakfasts, and she saw a spike and she's like, oh no, I can't have these anymore. And fast forward to, you know, today, end of the second week, and she had the gluten-free bagel in a much different way. I might not ruin the surprise as to what she did, but she's like, it only went up 20 points, you know? And it's like
amazing, yeah.
Right? 2 weeks, babe. I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I'm celebrating me right now.
Yeah, that's awesome. And one thing that a lot of people come into this experience expecting is to have to remove things, or they're fearful of losing their favorite foods. But, you know, I'm excited to hear what your tweaks were to that meal. But a lot of people walk away being able to incorporate more foods, or maybe add things back in that they previously were avoiding, which is really liberating and much more sustainable. So that's an awesome achievement on your end.
Thank you. I'm very excited about it. But I do want to just say, okay, for everyone out there listening, what is a CGM?
Yeah.
And why do you, as an RD, care about it?
Yeah. So a CGM, as you mentioned, stands for continuous glucose monitor. And it's just what it sounds like. It is a small device that you can put on the back of your arm. Other brands, you're able to put it on your abdomen, and it is going to measure your glucose continuously. So some people are probably familiar with a glucometer or a glucose meter, where you buy them over the counter and you take a finger prick, a small, you know, drop of blood, and it tells you your glucose in that point in time. So alternatively to that, where the glucometer is showing you a snapshot or a picture of your glucose, a CGM shows you a movie of your glucose. Mm. So it's showing you the curve and how your glucose is changing over time. And it doesn't require any finger pricks or blood drops. So that small device you put on at home, I kind of describe it because people are always worried if it hurts or always worried about how to put it on. It comes in a little applicator and you just push a button essentially, and it attaches to the back of your arm. And I describe it as kind of like an easy button. You know, you just push that button and it attaches to the back of your arm. There's an adhesive to kind of keep it in place. And then it stays there for 2 full weeks. So unlike an Oura Ring or an Apple Watch, you know, you don't put it on or take it off. You wear it for that 2 weeks straight. You can do your normal activities, you know, showering, working out, swimming, hot yoga. I play beach volleyball on it and dive on it, and it stays on. And at the end of the 2 weeks, you peel it off like a Band-Aid. And like I said, it allows you to see these insights that you really can't capture through traditional metrics like getting labs at a doctor's office or that finger prick at home. And it helps us see kind of the nuances of what's happening with your glucose values, which is very insightful, as you guys are probably aware. You know, you can learn 100 times more information in 2 weeks with a CGM than you could from pricking your finger or kind of those traditional lab values. Really speeds up that learning curve. And then as a dietitian, so I'm, you know, clinically trained as a registered dietitian. I started my career in a very traditional setting, working in hospitals, dealing with very sick patients. And through that experience, you know, I was very frustrated with some of the suffering I was seeing, with the lack of prevention or true health care. And so kind of jumped ship from there and led me down a path of really diving in deep into metabolic health, glucose, and then I led to the CGM. And so to answer your question of why it's interesting to me, I find the CGM a powerful tool from a healthcare perspective for 2 reasons. One is that it really allows that meaningful metric related to metabolic health, which I believe is kind of the bedrock core of health. It allows us to get a lot of that information about our metabolic health system, but also in a personalized manner, which is really lacking in nutrition. We give a lot of one size fits all advice in the nutrition world, a lot of contradicting opinions. And truly, at the end of the day, we're all unique individuals, and we have to personalize our information and our advice in order to make meaningful changes. And the second reason I find it really useful is that it's a powerful behavior change tool. Mm. Anybody who works with clients in any capacity knows that education is one component of it. Having that meaningful information, being able to deliver it in a powerful way and being able to personalize it to your client is one piece of the puzzle. But the other half is making sure that people actually can do the information and do it consistently and really truly drive behavior change. Because at the end of the day, that's the only reason we see results, is if we can consistently make meaningful change over time. And the power of just having immediate data that is tailored to your body really drives that behavior change component. And we can dive more into that. But after just testing these CGMs on myself and a couple of my friends and family, when I was learning about the devices, I realized that it's much more powerful to see in real action. Oh, wow, that walk really does help move my glucose, or, you know, really does improve my values, rather than hearing it from me or hearing it, you know, reading about it on a blog. It just drives behavior so much more when you can see it actually make a meaningful difference in your data. So that is a powerful component to just health coaching and nutrition counseling in general.
That's huge. Yeah, agree to that. all of what you said right there. And I can also attest to the it not being painful, because Jen was getting a little nervous when we went to put her
on. I made him do it for me.
She's like, do it, just do it for me. And I did. I pressed the easy button and she's like, wait, it's on? It's on? She didn't believe me. She didn't believe that I put it on. So,
it really is painless, people.
But, yeah, nobody believes me when I say it, because I am biased in a sense, but it really is painless. People are always surprised.
Yeah.
Definitely. So can you talk a little bit more? I mean, you mentioned metabolic health and, you know, how it's important to understand our metabolic health a little bit more. Just what are some other areas? And I know there are many, so I know that this could be an entire lecture, but that our blood glucose can really affect. What are some of the tangible health effects someone might be feeling if they don't have great blood glucose regulation?
Yeah, absolutely. And just to quickly touch on kind of the metabolic health component, you know, I think when people think about glucose, they think about diabetes, which is a very, you know, clear connection. The definition of diabetes is dysregulated glucose values. So there's certainly a connection there. But as I think people are becoming more aware that metabolic health and insulin resistance is not just related to diabetes, I sort of describe it as kind of the foundation. If we think of maybe a building, you know, you have to have the foundation first, and that is our metabolic health. And then the pieces that come off of that are our most common chronic conditions like diabetes, but also cardiovascular disease, neurological diseases. All of those are related to metabolic health. So if we have a good foundation where we have, you know, we are not insulin resistant, we are very insulin sensitive, and our glucose are in optimal ranges, we're much more likely to prevent some of these most common chronic conditions. So that is, of course, really important. You know, we want to expand our health span, so stay healthy as long as possible by having that good foundation of health. But it also impacts how we feel. So if you think about glucose, you know, whether you eat carbohydrates or not, whether you're putting in exogenous glucose into your body, you always have a baseline level of glucose in your blood. And it's essentially like the fuel in a car. You know, I describe our metabolic system as a cellular engine. It's kind of what drives all of the actions and behavior we do. And glucose is that primary fuel source for the car. You know, sometimes we can use alternative fuel sources if you want to think about a hybrid car, such as fats or ketones, and that might be a more efficient fuel source at different energy levels. But glucose is always going to be present and always going to be needed for energy, essentially. So that reflects in our energy levels. A lot of people who have big swings in their glucose levels, you know, maybe it's going up and down, especially after meals, are going to feel that energy crash, or, you know, hanger, so to speak, or maybe the urge to have a nap after a meal. A lot of that can be directly tied back to our glucose levels. So if we can stabilize that a little bit, we can also help stabilize our energy levels.
That's huge. I mean, understanding what you're feeling and actually being able to relate that to seeing numbers and seeing feeling justified and like, oh, this is why I feel so tired. This is why I'm feeling fatigued all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And essentially, that data in general can help enhance our mind-body connection. A lot of people will also recognize this if they use a, you know, like a fitness tracker where it's doing their heart rate or heart rate variability. You'll start to be able to feel that more closely. And people can also enhance that mind-body connection with the glucose values. You know, prior to wearing CGMs, I couldn't really tell when my glucose was high or low. In the extreme versions of really high or really low, you can tell. But a lot of times, you know, you might just feel tired or kind of fuzzy. But when you wear the CGM over time and you connect those subjective feelings with objective data, it enhances what is called interoceptive sensitivity, which is basically just the ability to feel your body's internal signals. So for a lot of people, and that's actually, they're starting to use CGM as a potential tool for eating disorder therapy, because it can connect a little bit better how you feel. You know, that's kind of a new area of research, and people are also using it kind of for obesity research, again, to connect how you feel, connect your hunger, and satiety cues with the data. So not just energy levels, but kind of all of those mind-body connections, subjective feelings can be enhanced by putting real numbers behind it. And like you're saying, it can also just validate like, oh, that big crash isn't just me being tired in the middle of the day, or that's not necessarily normal. Maybe I can optimize this, where if that's what's happening every day for you, normal is normal. And you don't realize how it could maybe be different or better if that's just your, you know, how you feel every day. So for a lot of people, it can be really eye-opening to see that from a more objective viewpoint.
This is all just so fascinating. And if someone does start wearing a CGM, what are kind of optimal levels that you're, because I remember you stated that there's optimal ranges that we can kind of hit within our glucose. Is that go across the board? Does it change based on certain factors? Can we give an optimal range to this?
Yes. So there are a few things to look at when you're first wearing a CGM. We can kind of think about it in two categories. One is when you're in a more fasted state, and one is more related to what's happening when you eat a meal. So kind of in a fasted state, we're typically looking for an average glucose, so kind of a 24-hour view at around 105 or less. And then a fasting glucose, when you've been without food for at least 8 hours, between 70 to 90, ideally. And then if we zoom in to when you're eating a meal, we want to see that peak glucose, so the highest it goes after a meal, ideally below 140. And then we like to see glucose return to what it was before you started eating within 2 to 3 hours. And this is through the lens of somebody who does not have insulin resistance, somebody who does not have any sort of metabolic syndrome. This is what we might be aiming for from kind of a non-diabetic viewpoint. And in our app, we have a glucose score, as I'm sure you guys have seen, that kind of combines these metrics to give you one kind of glance at how your day is looking. And then it, as baseline in our app, we're setting your upper threshold to that 140, but you can adjust it in the setting. So let's say you are coming in with prediabetes, your dietitian, which comes with our service at NutriSense, might recommend adjusting that upper threshold to 180 rather than 140, and that will loosen all of those guidelines. So we also want to match where someone is at, because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. You know, there is the guidelines for a non-diabetic, but if we're somewhere on the spectrum of insulin resistance, we might have to take baby steps to get kind of down into that optimal range again.
So I have a quick question that just popped into my mind, and I remember thinking about this back when I was in PT school. I don't know if it was a podcast I heard back then or something, but they were talking about how we, and this might be just me asking your opinion on something more so, but how we measure, you know, diabetes based more so on a fasted glucose or a glucose after a certain amount of time versus what our, you know, measuring what people's glucose does say after they eat a meal. And if we were to measure what people's glucose does after they do a meal, we might catch people a lot sooner that are starting to have insulin issues or are starting to have issues processing their blood glucose versus the way that we currently measure it. I'm not sure if you're understanding exactly what I'm asking right now.
Yep. Yeah. And I'm impressed if your school even mentioned that.
I don't think it was a school thing. I think it was kind of like you said, getting out of the traditional system thing. And it started to make a lot of sense to me because we don't often spend a ton of time in a fasted state. We spend a lot of time processing what we're putting into our body during the day. So
yes. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. And I could talk about this subject for a long time, so I'll try to keep it succinct. But traditionally, so how we diagnose diabetes currently, the guidelines is you can either look at A1C value, which is essentially an average glucose, and or a fasted glucose value. So both of those inherently aren't taking into account peaks in your glucose or swings in your glucose. You can have a pretty good average glucose and be having ups and downs all day long. So both of those are pretty imperfect measurements. And in my opinion, they don't tell the story at all. Mm. What we have experienced at NutriSense are tons of people who come in with a normal fasting glucose, a normal A1C, and very abnormal CGM readings. And we know from the literature that the literature is typically looking at what are called oral glucose tolerance tests, which can also be used to diagnose diabetes, but it's very uncommon because it's just not very fun for people to drink a bunch of sugar and wait 2 hours while they get their labs tested. So most physicians won't use that. But a lot of research that's looking at that will show that you can have a lot of normal metrics in that average glucose, fasted glucose state, and a very abnormal oral glucose tolerance test. So, you know, in response to a glucose challenge, a lot of people are not as metabolically healthy as they might have expected to be from those other measurements. So just like you're saying, it's our traditional values to diagnose are a bit lagging. And even to take it a step further, we know that prevention is better than treatment, which is part of the reason I'm so passionate about these metrics and these tools, is that if we can catch something that is more of a yellow flag than a red flag, it's so much easier to correct it. You know, diabetes and insulin resistance takes decades to develop. You know, it's not overnight. It's not after a vacation where you ate whatever. You know, it takes decades to develop. So if we can see a deviation, particularly most likely in that postprandial value or after eating, then we can swap some things around like you did, Jen, and we can prevent it from ever maybe getting abnormal or getting to the point of diabetes or insulin resistance. It's a lot easier to improve your glucose values with quick swaps early on than it is to take, you know, full-blown diabetes and kind of reverse it back into optimal, which is possible. I definitely don't want anyone to get discouraged if they are at that end of the spectrum, but it is certainly easier to catch things sooner rather than later.
I mean, this is huge. And I love the fact that you guys provide a dietitian to be able to chat with as you're going through the journey. I think that was so incredibly supportive to help understand things, to help troubleshoot things, and just to get some more clarity on what was happening throughout the 2 weeks. So that was, I mean, so valuable, you know, and really incredible of an offer as you're kind of learning and just approaching this. Now, if someone can't quite yet afford this, are there little tips and tricks that you can do to kind of start the journey of, okay, I want to start to maybe understand what these peaks and valleys can really feel like? And are there things that I should be doing first thing in the morning or throughout the day or helping my fasted state? Like, are there little tips and tricks that you can provide for people?
Yes, absolutely. And it is unfortunately still an expensive piece of technology. We strongly believe that it will decrease in cost over time. It already has exponentially, but certainly agree and understand that not everybody can afford this at this point in time. I would highly recommend, even though it's not optimal, but it is much better than nothing, to get annual labs. Everybody is entitled to annual labs at just a regular annual visit with a physician, and get that fasting glucose, get the A1C value, and at least make sure that you're on the right track year after year. And you can also get that glucose meter over the counter. They're very cheap, and you could check your glucose occasionally and see what's happening. Again, it's a snapshot versus a movie, but it's still insightful nonetheless.
That's huge.
But with all that being said, there are certainly tips and tricks that we have found to be helpful for everybody that people can implement regardless of, you know, if they're wearing the CGM or if they don't want to prick their finger. I definitely get that as well. And essentially, when we're thinking about glucose management, I describe it as four pillars of glucose control. We could think about nutrition, could think about exercise, physical activity, stress, and sleep. And all four of those are equally important. You know, I think we jump to nutrition naturally first because we think about carbs, sugar, but it's only 1/4 of the story, essentially. All four of those are important components. And I think people naturally, either subconsciously or consciously, want to neglect stress and sleep in particular. But it's very important that those are kind of taken into account. But if we're starting with nutrition, again, there's really no one size fits all. It's hard to say, you know, eat this thing, don't eat that thing. But we can always start by mastering the basics and then adapting the basics to yourself, you know, personalizing it a little bit, hopefully with some data. But the basics, really, we want to try to choose high quality food as much as possible. So really aiming more towards whole foods, you know, kind of trying to minimize processed food in general, processed carbs, added sugars, and really prioritizing protein and non-starchy vegetables. And a simple hack for a lot of people is at a meal, if you want to minimize your glucose response, eating that protein first. So let's say we're thinking about breakfast. Maybe you're having an omelet and hash browns. Eating some of that omelet first before you start digging into the hash browns can actually make a really meaningful difference. So we see this with just about everybody. So trying to eat that protein first and trying to make sure you're never doing naked carbohydrates. So carbohydrates by themselves can make a really big difference. And then just, you know, aiming for those whole foods as much as possible. And related to nutrition is about timing as well. This is something I think can be a little bit more difficult to implement just depending on your life situation, your schedule. You know, things don't always work by the books for everyone. And we know that we have to be flexible and adjust it to the real world. But if you can aim to eat your last meal at least 3 hours before bed, or maybe even earlier if possible, that can make a really big difference. What we see for most people is that the later we eat a meal, the more of an impact it's going to have on our glucose values. So if you can try to aim for that 3 hours before bed to have just time for fasting, that can also make a really meaningful difference as well.
Yeah, those are huge. And that's actually, especially the breakfast one, is what I did today.
Nice.
I actually hadn't been having the gluten-free bagel like at all. And then today I was like, well, I kind of feel like one. But instead of making it an egg sandwich, today I had Brussels sprouts first, then my eggs and chorizo. And then I had the toasted bagel with some goat cheese, and it did the thing.
That's awesome. Yeah. It makes a huge difference. It's really crazy. It's much more than I would have anticipated prior to seeing the data, but I've seen that replicated in just about everybody. So it is a useful tip that most people will be able to implement, and it'll make a difference.
Yeah, it's huge.
And my biggest issue that you just mentioned is the eating before sleep thing.
Yeah.
You know, I consistently have goals on my goal chart to like stop eating by 10 p.m., which I know probably sounds pathetic, but that's that is decent for me, because then I'm not going and grabbing dates and a scoop of big scoop of almond butter or something and eating it at midnight right before I go lay down. But I, yeah, absolutely have significantly noticed there's been a few nights I've stopped eating at 7, you know, right when the sun's just going down, and the difference that what is happening to my blood glucose overnight is profound compared to when I'll eat even up to 10 o'clock. Can you talk a little bit more about why that happens?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is a big one. And I know for a lot of people, we can't adjust that too much. But like you're mentioning, I think it's very common for someone just to kind of have a scoop of something or a bite of something right before bed or an hour before bed. And it's usually more because it's tempting and it's enjoyable. But it does make a really big difference. So essentially, you know, I think a lot of us are familiar that some of our hormones work on a circadian rhythm. Probably most commonly known is melatonin. So, you know, melatonin is what helps us feel either awake or sleepy, depending on if melatonin is high or low, and it works on a circadian rhythm. But the hormones that help us metabolize food also work on a circadian rhythm. So particularly insulin, which is what helps us kind of clear that glucose from our bloodstream, tends to wax and wane depending on the time of day. And most people have the lowest insulin sensitivity in the middle of the night and the highest best insulin sensitivity in the middle of the day. And this is just probably because from an evolutionary perspective, we are not primed to be eating a big meal in the middle of the night. You know, our body is switching to other functions that are more about, you know, rest and restoration and repair. Whereas during the day, our body is more primed and ready to go to be metabolizing food, you know, eating and kind of dealing with that incoming energy. So for a lot of people, trying to align your eating with daytime hours, you know, daylight hours is a good general rule of thumb. It can really help align our meal intake with the way our body's kind of primed to be with that insulin sensitivity.
That's huge. Now, how does movement and exercise impact your glucose? I mean, for example, I know Dom and I talked last time about how, you know, getting really high intense workouts, we'd still see those spikes. Is that bad if we're seeing the spikes during exercise? And then how can we use exercise around food to kind of help as well?
Yeah, great question. A lot of people get worried when they see that glucose spike during exercise, but it is not bad. Exercise is a very, very good, healthy thing. So we can think about exercise and glucose from both a perspective of what's happening in the moment while we're exercising and how that exercise is impacting us kind of at a bigger picture. So first, thinking about it in the moment, we can really think about this through the lens of supply and demand with energy. So if we're doing a type of exercise that's more of a steady state, you know, going on a jog, doing kind of mild strength training, we typically see glucose either stay stable or go down a little bit because the energy we have available is usually enough to kind of fuel that exercise. But the more intense the exercise gets, the more that our body is going to need to provide some additional fuel. So if we're thinking high intensity interval training, if we're thinking really heavy weightlifting, any sort of, you know, sprinting stuff, things that are high intensity, our body is going to release some extra glucose, usually through breaking down our glucose stores or maybe even creating some new glucose. And that is going directly to fuel the exercise, which is physiologically normal and healthy. You know, if that didn't happen, then we would get hypoglycemic during the exercise and we wouldn't be able to perform. So it's a good thing. And it's a lot different from a physiological standpoint than if you're sitting on the couch and you have a box of M&Ms and the glucose spikes to the same level. You know, when we're eating in that situation of the M&Ms, our body is essentially breaking down that sugar and we have a new flood of glucose into the system. Then insulin is released and we need to put that energy somewhere. Whereas in the situation of doing some sprints, that energy is being released and going directly towards the exercise to supply the energy we need. And actually, a lot of that exercise driven glucose response ends up being non-insulin mediated, meaning that we don't even need insulin to take that glucose up. It goes through kind of a different pathway. So a lot of people get worried if they're really focused on maybe avoiding insulin responses or thinking about metabolic health or fasting from an insulin viewpoint. They get worried that a glucose spike during exercise is breaking a fast or causing an insulin response. But it really is two totally different physiological systems. So it's important to know that that is not a bad thing and it's very normal. And the flip side is looking at it from a more macro view. You know, how is exercise impacting our glucose on a whole? And it is very clear cut from both, you know, the clinical experiences we have at NutriSense, but also the research that all types of exercise, whether it's the steady state, whether it's aerobic, whether it's strength training, whether it's high intensity, all types of exercise improve our glucose in the long run, both increasing our insulin sensitivity and improving our ability to control our glucose. All of those beneficial effects can be seen with all types of exercise. Skeletal muscle in particular is a large sink for incoming glucose. Almost 80% of the circulating glucose that comes after a meal ends up going to the skeletal muscle. So the more skeletal muscle we build up, the more we use our muscles, even in a gentle way like walking, can really improve that glucose, you know, stability and control some of that glucose fluctuation. So a very, very positive habit overall.
That is so important to continue to hear and continue to remember just how impactful movement can be. One thing that I was curious about too is, do our glucose levels change, especially as a woman, before any menopause happens? Can our glucose levels be affected based on our menstrual cycle? Would it change based on what's happening?
Yes, absolutely. And this is where, you know, I think it was Stacey Sims who coined this, but women are not small men. Yeah. We are different and we have totally different, metabolic responses, totally different hormone responses. And we do see different glucose fluctuations depending on your menstrual cycle. And also, you know, during and after menopause is also going to have a big effect. And again, it's personalized. It differs a little bit from person to person, but as a general pattern, what we typically see is that during the follicular phase, so the first 2 weeks of your cycle, we typically see better insulin sensitivity, lower glucose levels, similar carbohydrate metabolism and sensitivity as men typically in that stage. Whereas in the luteal phase, which is week 3 and 4 between ovulation and menstruation, is when we see usually greater fluctuations in glucose, higher glucose levels overall. And this is due to the increase in progesterone during this time. Progesterone in general tends to make us a little bit less insulin sensitive and put us in a slightly more insulin resistant state. So again, it differs from person to person. Some people see this effect very moderately, you know, a small increase, and some people see it a lot more dramatically, maybe quite a significant increase in glucose during this time. And like we were talking about in the beginning of just kind of putting data to how you feel, I think for a lot of people, this can be liberating where it's, you know, I feel different during this time for a lot of reasons, but you can also see that there's actually a physiological effect. You know, my glucose is changing and maybe these cravings are more related to the physiology that's happening. And we can put a different mindset to it rather than feeling guilty or bad. I think for a lot of people, it could be helpful to kind of see actual data respond to this rather than thinking, you know, there's something wrong with you or you're weak or you're giving into cravings. There's definitely, you know, legitimate changes happening every month.
That's so important to continue to remember and be able to see.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think the fourth pillar that you kind of mentioned having to do with stress, was it?
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. So... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but doesn't that have something else to do with hormones like cortisol that's present during stressful situations or when our body's very stressed out? And can you explain that a little more and what we might be able to do about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So stress is going to have a major effect on our glucose. And we can think of it kind of both in an acutely stressful moment and then chronic stress. So acute stress is very normal to see this spike in hormones like cortisol, like you mentioned. And that spike in cortisol is going to lead to kind of a flood of glucose into the body. This is typically breakdown of our glycogen stores and also creating new glucose from the liver, because that spike in cortisol is telling our body that we need energy and we need it now. You know, something is going on, we're in a stressful state and we need some extra energy. So a lot of people will see this in acutely stressful moments, like they're in a traffic jam and they're angry because they're late for work now, or, you know, they're late for something, or maybe an argument with their boss or something that they're nervous about. Maybe they're giving a presentation. They'll see this glucose spike. And for some people, especially our members who are following a low carbohydrate diet, some of these stress glucose spikes are the highest they ever see in their days. So it can be quite powerful, but usually it returns back down to normal fairly quickly. Where we start to run into some trouble is, well, one, if we're having these acutely stressful moments fairly often, or if it's really turning into that chronic stress, which is the same physiological response that in that cortisol followed by glucose, but it's more of a constant hum rather than a dramatic spike. So we see this kind of baseline elevated glucose throughout the day, especially in a fasted state. So if somebody is consistently seeing high glucose values when they're sleeping or in the morning before they've eaten, we'll look at a few things, but one of the most common things that we kind of probe into is your stress levels and also your sleep quality and quantity, which can essentially be more of a physical stressor on the body in addition to kind of psychological stress like we think of first usually. So essentially, you know, this is just causing that constant hum of a glucose response in the body. And to deal with that, you know, I think there's no one size fits all approach again, broken record with that phrase. But, you know, stress management is also going to be personalized. I think for some people, mindfulness is really important. It might be social connection, outdoor time, exercise, deep breathing. And sometimes there might be a deeper cause to the stress that has to be addressed. You know, you could do all the mindfulness in the world, but if you have maybe some trauma underneath or other things that are stemming or causing that stress constantly, then that has to be dealt with and not just approached with kind of a band-aid stress management on top of it, which of course is outside of my scope. You know, we really refer people to mental health professionals if we feel like that might be the primary health change they need to make. But it is important to kind of be aware of it and acknowledge it.
I mean, this is so huge because I love, and what makes you a good healthcare professional is that it is personalized and it always does depend, and it's never constant across the board, you know? And I think that's what's cool with NutriSense in terms of what you guys have created here, giving people the opportunity to be able to see and experience their individual selves change throughout the day. Like that is, and how they can adjust, what they can do. Like Dom and I have learned so many little things, you know, little tips and tricks. And we're now doing like this morning, we even started with water and apple cider vinegar,
got a flask of apple cider vinegar on me at all times.
Just in case. No, but like just starting to understand how we can start to regulate this process so that we can carry it into our everyday lives and start to feel that impact and feel that change is so incredibly huge. If someone did want to start to explore this, what do you guys have to offer? Like, where should they go?
Yeah. So to sign up and kind of explore this, the easiest place is our website, which is NutriSense.io. And we offer a few different options. So like you mentioned, we pair the CGM and our app with a dietitian. We really believe that if we want to be in the business of behavior change, you have to pair data with humans. I think data alone is not sufficient. You have to add that human element in order to truly personalize it and to make sure that the individual doing the process, seeing the data, is taking out the correct insights. You know, the last thing I want to do is that somebody is thinking they can never eat that bagel again, and now the bagel is on their ban list, when maybe we just needed to talk through strategies. And an app alone, I don't think, can always solve that problem. A human is important. So we have both the dietitian that you can chat with, the CGMs that you'll receive, and then our app that kind of pulls it all together. And we have different subscription options depending on how long you want to do it for. We kind of have a month-to-month option if you're not really sure, you want to just kind of test it out. There's no commitment. You can cancel at any time. And then you could always switch to a commitment plan if you realize you like it after the first month. And then we have commitment options where we do a 3-month, 6-month, or 12-month. I believe that 3 months is a great sweet spot if you're relatively healthy and you want to just experiment with different things, learn how you respond to different activities, have time to kind of see how your glucose changes from different, you know, menstrual cycle changes or from different stressors or changes in your routine. 3 months is a really good amount of time, where I would recommend more 6 to 12 months if you know you have a lot of changes you want to make. If you have a health journey ahead of you, you know, maybe you have a lot of weight you want to lose, or maybe you're pre-diabetic or diabetic or PCOS, you know, you have a lot of glucose fluctuations. It does take time, as I'm sure you guys are aware and have mentioned before. It takes time to make real meaningful changes. So if you kind of have a bigger health goal in front of you, that longer time frame might be helpful.
Yeah, so huge.
Absolutely agree with that. And I can't speak enough to, I mean, I've done two week stints on the CGM, and the amount I've learned has been astounding. The ability to have access to that registered dietitian, and like you said, y'all don't, you know, go into the realm of mental health, but I feel like always, as any sort of healthcare professional, you are a coach and you're an emotional support in some sort of way, because you're helping someone not realize that they're damned if they eat the bagel, you know, and there's ways to do it. So just even the emotional support of having somebody there to say, oh, why don't you try this? Or why don't you try that, is huge. And, you can actually, if you are considering going and getting one, you can use code OPTIMAL. That will get you $50 off your first month. So thank you, NutriSense, for giving us that special code for our podcast listeners. And thank you so much, Kara, for taking the time to come on, talk everything glucose, blood glucose. I know we barely just scratched the surface, and we can dive so much deeper, hopefully at some point in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a pleasure.
Another enlightening interview on blood glucose with Kara. So grateful to have her on. And please, anyone who's interested, go check out NutriSense. Also, remember, we just recently came out with our new Gen Health platform. So if you're interested in trying the free week to get into some of the plans to address your specific body parts, your aches and restrictions, to search some of Jen's most popular Instagram content and other classes that she's recorded, please go to jen.health or check that link out in our bio and start your free week trial. Of course, if you've been enjoying the podcast, we always ask that you go leave a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. Maybe share it out with a friend, and we will see you next time on the Optimal Body Podcast.